One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to this Tuesday edition of the Creative City Show, Tuesday, November 12th. With me, your host, Zach Yenser. As daily on this program, 9 to 10 every morning, we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. Along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical to getting us there. A real quick panning the show today, and we'll jump right in. Couple guest conversations here. Excited to welcome in the new principal of San Miguel High School here in the first part of the hour. And then the only Southern Arizona representative, even though she represents the whole state, but the only one from Southern Arizona on the Arizona Corporation Commission, Leah Marquez Peterson. We'll be in studio for the back half of the hour for our monthly ACC update. It's an extensive organization that does everything from energy to setting up corporations and small businesses in Tucson, very wide ranging. So we'd like to have Leah in to give us an update month to month after their general meetings. And then just a quick sneak peek, I'm shooting for tomorrow, maybe later in the week, but working to get Ramon Valadez from the Pima County Board of Supervisors on to walk us through the new PAYGO system that was passed by the board to keep the roads updated and maintained. I wanted to do a deep dive, nitty gritty, kind of get in the head of the board, both on the 463 side last year, and then also now the PAYGO side. How did we get from there to here? You know me, I like to do those deep dives. So working on that for you this week, Tucson. But without further ado, Mr. Richards, welcome to Tucson. Welcome to San Miguel High School. How are you?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Zach. I'm doing great. It's great to be back in Tucson, a community that I've known well from years ago.
Yes. Yeah, it's good to have you back. And you had mentioned when we met each other here in the studio just a minute ago, you've only been in the position 4 weeks. I said, that's exactly why I wanted to talk with you in the near future of you assuming the position. You come in with 20 years of local, national, international experience as a classroom teacher, school administrator, curriculum resource developer, leader of programs. I mean, you've been in the business, so to speak, for a while. Before we dive in on your experience, what excites you about San Miguel High School? And if anybody listening hasn't gotten to hear any of my past interviews on San Miguel, what makes San Miguel so special here in Tucson?
Yeah, thanks, Zach, for that question. One of the things that excites me most about San Miguel is the potential that our young people have, our students have, to go to college, to succeed in college, to transform their lives, to transform their families, and ultimately to transform our community. You know, San Miguel, for some of your listeners who may not know, San Miguel is a college, Catholic college prep school here on the south side of Tucson. And so we offer a unique program in that all of our students are from families of limited financial means, but they're in a college-bound program in our school. And some of your listeners actually might know us because our students are the ones who go to work at a corporate office type job. Each student goes to work one day a week, but a team of four students job shares a full-time position. So the combination of the work program in the corporate office setting plus the college prep curriculum and the Catholic identity is what makes us really unique in Tucson. We're actually in our 15th year of operation now. Wow. And so we already have some fantastic alumni stories. I was just with one alum this past weekend who's down from Seattle. He works at Microsoft Corporation. He was reflecting on his time at San Miguel, how different his life is today because of his education at San Miguel, not only the college prep education that led him to a four-year program, but also the work experience that he had, which meant for him at 18 years old, he had 4 years of fantastic job experience on his CV already.
Right. The basic model is, we're with Michael Richards, the principal, the new principal at San Miguel High School. By the way, if you want to call in and welcome Michael back to Tucson or ask a question about an academic institution in Tucson that I believe is leading the way in workforce development, the education of the future, I think there's so many good things happening. Give us a call on our Why I Love Where I Live live line, 520-790-2040 here. while we have Mr. Richards in the studio. There's a couple of ways that students and families have some skin in the game here. There's on the tuition side, if I remember correctly, but then there's also they have to work and study. The students have to work and study. So it's proportional to means and income and kind of socioeconomic level, but you guys have built in a couple ways where parents and students have skin in the game all the way through. Is that a unique model in your experience, or one that is really a seed for success?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, they do have skin in the game. Everyone needs to. Yeah, this is not. We like to say this is not a handout, but a helping hand up. Right. So, every family who comes to us pays something. We have a cost per student per family, but that is broken. That is brought down to the level of their financial means by way of some financial applications and financial aid programs. It's approximately just under 50%. We're around 50% of a student's education is then funded by the work that they do in the community. So we like to say it's real work with real expectations. Yeah. For real pay. Now, the students don't actually see that money directly in our model. We have a sort of temp employment agency. Mm-hmm. Parallel to the school that hires, trains, supervises, coordinates, organizes all of the aspects of the job program, and they receive the funding from the businesses on the students' behalf. They're able to divert that then to the school for about 50% of their tuition. The rest of it then we make up through tax credits, which is something that we're privileged to have, I think, here in Arizona, and through community fundraising.
Hmm.
So yeah, they have students and families have a lot of skin in the game financially, in terms of the work that they do in the job program, and the students and families have a lot of skin in the game, if you will, in terms of the academic programs. This is a rigorous college prep curriculum.
Yep.
Now, all of our students are college bound, so they're all on a path towards a 4-year university program, wherever that might be. Huh? Our college counselors work hard to try and match to find the right match for them, right? So match both academically, financially, geographically, etc. Put those factors together, and that's how we help determine the right match for them. And then we work with them not only to get to college, but to get through college as well. So we're right. One of the exciting new initiatives we have at San Miguel now is alumni support advisor, Mr. Ricky Dominguez, who maybe could be a guest of yours one day too. Ricky works directly with our alums, who are particularly those who are in university right now, to make sure that if they're running into trouble academically, financially, socially, whatever it might be, that they always know that they have someone they can call.
Absolutely.
And a guy on our end who's committed to helping them find the resources to make it all the way through college. Yeah. As well. So to and through college, we like to
say. Incredible. And this is the school, San Miguel, that Michael Richards gets to return to and be principal of here moving forward. And when we come back from the break, I want to continue this conversation, but also, you know, get the 1 or 2 minute highlight of your background. But really, I wanted to talk to Michael Richards about through his domestic and international research. You've been around the globe in education. What are the metrics of success for a successful school? And what are your plans and vision for San Miguel moving forward? You bring this global experience. What's the metrics, and what does that look like for San Miguel here in Tucson? We've got so much more to go here with our conversation with the new-ish principal of San Miguel High School, Michael Richards, in studio. 790-2040 is your Why I Love Where I Live live line to join the conversation. About to enter the green room is Leah Marquez Peterson, ACC commissioner for the back half of our hour. Lots to go here. Don't go away. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Tucson, welcome back to the program. You're listening to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, here in the 1030 The Voice studios. We're with Michael Richards, the returning principal of San Miguel High School. I say returning because this is not the first time at San Miguel, but you're coming back from some international research and work in education to be the principal of this amazing school here in the city of Tucson. If you want to welcome Michael back or you want to ask a question, we're going to get into metrics of success. What makes a school good with Mr. Richards here in studio? Give us a call on our Why I Love Where I Live live line. Our special Tuesday live line, sponsored by my friends at Why I Love Where I Live, 790-2040. I'm also excited to quickly share that today's show is sponsored in part by the Allstate Agencies of Edmund Marquez. As an Allstate agent for the last 23 years, Edmund has three local agencies to serve you. His passion is helping Tucsonans create their best possible future, and he backs that up by serving on 8 boards of directors in Tucson, including the Rio Nuevo District, Sun Corridor, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and more, and brings the same commitment to helping Tucson residents protect their home, auto, personal property, and financial future. So go ahead and stop by one of his three locations in Tucson to get to know him and how he can help you and your family. Call 520-323-9333 to get your insurance quotes today. Back to Michael Richards. One of the things that I love about your bio, and let's give a minute to go into that, is you worked internationally in education. Give us the 1 minute drive-by of your career here as you come back to San Miguel.
Yeah, so since 2014, I've been based in Europe, in Brussels, just outside of Brussels at the University of Leuven, or sometimes people will pronounce it as Louvain. And I've been there as part of an international research team, a research group, as we call it, working with, well, in our case, primarily Catholic schools all around the world, but by extension, other schools as well. These have been schools primarily in the western part of the world, so Western Europe, Australia, North America, but also to some extent Southeast Asia, the Middle East, and Latin America as well. Part of the work that we've been doing is to help support teachers, principals, and school leaders in identifying different aspects of what makes education relevant today in a changing world, in a world that's increasingly pluralistic, could be pluralistic philosophically, religiously, politically, however. So what makes education relevant in that pluralistic setting? And how does that look in terms of actual educational programming? So it's less and less, from an international perspective, it's less and less about a sort of one-size-fits-all program.
Absolutely.
Where you have students just all sitting in a line, following the same track, if you will, trying to hit the same level of achievement at the same moment, and then passing or not passing on to the next level. It's less and less about that, and more and more about the differentiated learning, about the spaces of dialogue, spaces of differentiation in the learning process.
Very cool. That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing since 2014. But prior to 2010, I was back here. Here in Tucson, and it was part of the founding group at San Miguel in 2004 when we were just 50-some students and 5 teachers, and now we're much bigger than that.
that's amazing. This ties into at least the one question that I want to ask you here before our bottom of the hour hits, and it's rapidly approaching. Yep. I do want to honor our callers, though. Greg called in 790-2040 to welcome Michael Richards back to Tucson. Greg, you're on the air for a quick question. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Zach. And Michael, it's exciting to hear you say what you're saying, because I've been an advocate of alternatives for quite a long time. And I was reading about Germany and how they look at kids when they're 8, 9, 10, 11, and other countries as well, where they try to determine where does that child want to be in life. And when I went to high school, I knew I wanted to go into radio and law. So learning geometry and trigonometry just didn't apply, you know, to me. That sort of, boilerplate approach is fast going out the window. So my question for you would be this. There was a woman campaigning for somebody, and she said, oh, her candidate was against the charter schools and alternative schools. Why is it that these public school teachers and that whole group, that the teachers union, are so against the alternatives that that you present and others present. What? Why are they staunchly, you know, for the old school way?
Craig, I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. Do you have a 30-second reply to that, Michael Richards?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Zach. Thanks for your question, Greg. I can't speak really to the why and the wherefores of the people you're referring to, Greg, because I'm just transitioning back into the U.S. still. But in terms of having options in education, I think you raise a fantastic point. Not only options in terms of different types of schools, but also options in terms of the programmatic areas that students study. So yeah, you're absolutely right. For example, in Germany and some other places in Western Europe and other parts of the world, they do work more actively with students at younger ages to help them determine their skill level, their interests, their academic capacities, and they help put them on one of two or three different tracks for their high school career. So some students can be on an academic track, other school students would be on a more practical track. Yeah. So we have, I think we still have a lot of open questions here in our community, in our state, about options for students in education, both in terms of type of school and in terms of the tracks that students can study. You know, at San Miguel, we're a college prep school, so the idea is that all the students, all of our students at San Miguel, are on the academic track, to a four-year university program. But that's not the only kind of education that students need and our community needs today.
Absolutely. And I appreciated Greg's question, too, in that it kind of hit on one of the themes I wanted to talk with you about, and so we already have, and that is, I think, the future of work and how education systems connect with that. It's going to have to be very tailored. We see that at Pima County, Pima Community College, where they work with workforce employers to tailor their education to what the workforce needs. So that might be our next conversation, Michael Richards. But we have 3.5 minutes, it looks like. And so this is the question that I want to get your thoughts on. What makes a good school good? Well, what are the ingredients of a successful academic institution, and that's going to be your way as a principal of also answering what are you going to do here at San Miguel. So let's wrap up with that question.
Sure. So if we look, that's a great question, because there's different ways of looking at what makes a good school good. Because that begs the question, what is the purpose of education? And I think if you ask different people, you're going to get different answers. Rightly so. We should have a robust debate today on what the purpose of education is and what makes a good school good. So one of the ways of looking at that are what we can consider to be sort of quantitative metrics. Our school, as a college prep school, we would consider good if students are achieving at X level of the SATs, if they're getting into universities at X rate, a 99, 100% rate, if they're succeeding in a four-year program within 4 or 5 years, and what's that success level? So there are certain quantitative metrics for a good school. But there's also a qualitative metric, or not a metric, but a qualitative way of looking at it as well, and that is the kind of ability that young people have when they graduate from us and when they graduate from college to be a fully contributing, participating member of society with, and I'll add this part, with a what I call a creative and a critical consciousness in society. So an ability to, for example, participate in robust political discussions, to not only participate in the world of work, but to think about and innovate for what's the next need, what's the future looking like. So there's that qualitative side as an outcome of education as well. In terms of what makes a good school good on the inside, there are a couple key ingredients from my perspective. One is the whole system of curriculum, standards, assessment, and instructional practices, excuse me. So I think on the inside, a good school is good when it sets clear expectations for what students should know and be able to do by the end of X program, whether that's a four-year program or whether that's by the end of sophomore year or by the end of sixth grade. that's a conversation that's not new, right? We've been having a lot of conversations statewide and nationally in the last couple decades about standards. But then what do you do with those standards? And I think in my experience, a good school first uses those standards to design a high-quality assessment that can be so-called objective-style assessments like multiple choice exams, or it can also be, and it should also be, authentic forms of assessment. Mm. So by the end of this program, how will you know that students know what you've asked them to know and be able to do? And then the rest of it is quality instruction that flows after that.
We've just scratched the surface with an international, I say, leader in education, Michael Richards. Welcome back to Tucson. Welcome back to San Miguel.
Thanks.
This sets us up for our next conversation. We'll do this even more in depth, so much more to come.
Super.
Thank you, sir. That takes us to the bottom of the hour, Tucson. Leah Marquez Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commissioner, is on her way in from the green room at the bottom of the hour. Don't go away. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome back to this bottom of the hour piece of our Tuesday, November 12th episode here on the Creative City Show. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, here in the beautiful studios at 1030 The Voice. And joining me for the rest of the hour is Arizona Corporation Commissioner Leah Marquez Peterson, representing the whole state, but the only one hailing from Southern Arizona. So we do a monthly ACC update because of their wide-ranging work in the state, but also because we have Leah Marquez Peterson right here in studio with us, or in the city with us on a monthly basis to do this. So thank you for your time.
No, thank you for the invitation.
And apparently I caught you before you got crazy busy. You're traveling all over the state the rest of the month.
You know, I'm from Southern Arizona, grew up here and so on. And as you know, I ran the Tucson Hispanic Chamber for about the last 10 years, but it's important to me as a statewide official to be throughout the state. So this week I'm heading to Globe, heading up to Anthem a little later today. I'm in Nogales this week. So just a lot of different communities. So I'm sure to meet with utility operators, business owners, mayors, city managers, and so on as I'm traveling around.
Absolutely. Busy. Well, I'm glad that you're here. Thank you.
Yeah. And before we jump into ACC items, I wondered if I could just congratulate you on your 40 Under 40 Award, Zach.
I appreciate it.
I know the Tucson Hispanic Chamber and the Arizona Daily Star are going to be celebrating this on, I think it's December 2nd,
mm-hmm. Yep.
At a big event, but I think it's just such an honor and you're doing such great work in the community. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I was just telling somebody else, I'm not used to talking about that yet or adding that into bios. So people have to remind me to remember that it happened, but it's such an honor. I appreciate it.
It is. And I've been involved in the 40 Under 40 Awards for probably more than a decade. And we get so many highly qualified leaders throughout the community, and to be selected as one of the 40 is a big deal. I mean, I think what people will see from the Arizona Daily Star that day, I think on the 2nd, an insert comes out in the middle of the paper, and it details all the leadership experiences of the 40 Under 40 each year, and it's incredible. So be sure and pull that piece out of the Star and read through it and learn more about Zach's background.
I appreciate it. Thank you for starting way. Yeah. And that wasn't scripted, by the way.
That's right.
That is off script, so thank you. So, Leah, there's been not one but two meetings, right? Between the time you were last in studio, there was the October meeting, and then the November ACC meeting just happened late last week, correct?
Honestly, I can't remember. But yes, okay. I think so. Two.
The minutes are from the 6th of November.
Yeah, we have a meeting about every week, if not two a week, that is on, it's either a workshop, we dive in very deep into a particular issue, working on rulemaking and policies, or it's an open meeting. Mm-hmm. So it's going by in a blur. It's been about 6 months since I was appointed
That's
by
right.
Governor Ducey in the spring.
Yep.
Yeah, and so learning so much and involved in so many different issues, but
for sure.
If you say so, there were two meetings since we last talked.
Okay,
that's
we'll go off the minutes on the website. There's two things that I want to talk to you about, and that would be some renewable energy plans that have been in the works on the board or the commission. And then also your thoughts on at least the piece that you work with in the state around water.
Water
is an important topic. I know you only work on a certain piece of it, but I want to cover that a little bit if we can. But besides those two themes, we've got the whole rest of the hour. Anything right now on your radar, top of mind, that you're really in the weeds on for a kind of November or December update for us.
There's so many issues. And if you don't mind, if I start with saying, what is the Arizona Corporation Commission? For those that might not be familiar, we're a 5-member elected board. I was appointed to this in the spring, but we cover the entire state. So a lot of people have heard of the CorpCom or the Corporation Commission, but not sure what we do. So we make sure that we have safe, reliable, and affordable utilities. Bottom line, we do a lot of other stuff beyond that in terms of tackling securities fraud. We incorporate all the businesses in the state, pipeline safety, railroad crossings, lots of other things. But I think the overall thing most folks know us for is really ensuring that we're protecting the ratepayers and providing safe, reliable, and affordable utilities. So in that regard, I mean, we could jump right into renewable energy standards. A prior commission had set a goal of 15% renewables by 2025, and our utilities have achieved that. We're getting a lot of reports from them and hearing from them directly on what's the next step. A lot of states surrounding Arizona have been much more aggressive. I know internally each of the different commissioners is talking about goals we should set as a state in the future. Should it be, much larger in terms of clean energy? What should the renewable standard be? How much of that should be subsidized? The cost of solar has gone down dramatically. The cost of solar panels has gone down dramatically. So how much of that should be mandated by the Corporation Commission and how much of that should be free market? If you're not familiar, most probably are listening to this show, but it is a monopolistic industry. So TEP, as an example, has a territory here. If you live within that territory, you don't have a choice. You have TEP, or you have Trico, or you have one of the electric co-ops, or APS or SRP in Phoenix. So because of that monopolistic piece of the industry, we as commissioners can mandate on, we are the regulators of those industries. And that's why we set a lot of the energy efficiency goals, renewable energy standards. We mandate certain programs. And where do we get the information for that? From the ratepayer. So I hear from a lot of folks sending me cards, sending me emails, calling about their perspective on where Arizona should be. A lot of people believe, and I agree, that we should really be the land of solar and batteries. As technology improves related to battery storage, we need to be leading that. I'm describing it to people so that it's clear, is there's such thing as daytime power, right? When the sun's up, solar energy works, solar panels work. Nighttime power, you need a battery storage, like your cell phone battery or something that's storing that energy to get you through the evening. And we aren't quite there yet in terms of technology to be able to store to get through the entire nighttime power cycle. So that's something I think we're going to see a lot of change in the next few years.
Now, on the this came up because Arizona Public Services, yes, I got that acronym right, application for 2019 Renewable Energy Standard Implementation Plan was approved at one of the last meetings that,
right.
that are a blur. Leah Marquez-Peterson, ACC Commissioner. And so I wanted to ask you about that. Has there been, as the regulators of utilities, do you feel like the commission is out further ahead of the utilities on some of those renewable energy requirements? Do you feel like you're having to drag the utilities kicking and screaming, or is that getting easier? Is there more alignment around renewable energy as a larger and larger piece of the utility pie? What's the state of the union on that?
So the energy mix that each utility uses is a slice of nuclear, some coal, you've got wind, you've got solar, you've got all these different components that make up the mix for each utility. The utilities have been at it so long and they've received so much data and information. They're really assessing all the time. Where can they get low cost energy, something that's reliable? Because I've learned, even with wind farms and things like that, when the wind's not blowing, no energy is coming through. So how do you provide that kind of sustainable, consistent energy for your ratepayers? So they're studying and they're analyzing all of that. I've been at this about 6 months, and during my first couple of workshops on energy planning for the state and some other topics that we were tackling, some of the utilities brought in companies that would look at that balance between what energy uses are out there as well as what's the affordability.
Right.
And we've really got to balance that because, I run around as a mantra, we are about safe, reliable, affordable. So certainly we could be 100% one of those energies tomorrow, what are you willing to pay, right? So we need to make sure it's balanced and it makes sense, but we're also taking into account not to limit the ability for the utility to take advantage of that technology as things progress. You know, 10 years ago, we didn't have the battery technology that we do today. And things are just, I mean, think of your cell phone over the last 10 years, how that's changed from a brick to light as a feather, or whatever it is now. So, I mean, I think you're going to see so much of that progress over time. So in terms of who's ahead of the other, I'd say we're pretty much aligned. I am starting to go to national conferences because I want to see what's happening beyond Arizona. Mm. We have our own energy sources here. Obviously, solar is something that works great in Arizona. But if you're in Connecticut, you're in New Jersey, you're in California, you're in other states, what are they doing? What are they talking about? What policies are they putting in place? You hear a lot of the same themes, but each state kind of taking a different angle on it. And not all of their commissions are structured the same way either. We're elected, and there are five of us, and we're statewide. Others are appointed by their governor. Some are by district. I mean, it's very different state by state, and that certainly impacts their energy planning as they move forward, too.
For sure. Seems very individualized. You kind of jumped ahead, and I'm glad you did, to my last question of the segment on this topic, is I think a lot of ratepayers, right, a lot of our listeners, a lot of homeowners, those paying the rates would go, yeah, I'm on board the renewable energy train, but not at the expense of me paying affordable utilities at the lowest possible cost to me. I think a lot of people are focused more on the pocketbook than on the renewable side of things. So for a ratepayer listening, what are some of your assurances, or what are some of your strategies? And I know I'm asking a big question in 2 minutes or less.
That's what I have two minutes.
Ideally, and we can spill over to the next segment if it's a more in-depth. But for a ratepayer listening, what are some of the assurances you might have for them of that you're fighting for the future, but you're fighting for them at the same time as well?
Absolutely, and that's a great point. Right now, you can be assured that we are at least 15% renewable energy with whether you're APS or TEP at this point, and beyond in many cases. That is absolutely something that we're talking about at the commission. Again, how much should be mandated? How much should be free market? Mm-hmm. That's a whole workshop and series of conversations that we're having. In California, which is deregulated to a sense, they've got kind of a hybrid model that I don't want to confuse people about, but there's an option to do 100% renewable energy and pay for that, and you're paying a different price than others who are looking at the most affordable options.
Okay.
So that whole, we're having a lot of workshops right now around retail competition or deregulation. We're having conversations on planning future workshops where people can weigh in. But all that weighs heavily on me in terms of how do we ensure that we're providing affordable service, mm-hmm. while also making sure that we're meeting those green standards or those renewable standards that so many of our ratepayers want to see in place.
So that 15% that you're at right now isn't ballooning costs. You've got it. You feel like you've got a good balance of regulating the utility, keeping it affordable for the ratepayer.
Yes, but the commissioners that put that in place years ago also has had to subsidize those industries at the time. So if you looked at your TEP bill, there's a line that says surcharge, and it was going to assist that industry. Mm. Now the costs are different. Costs have dropped dramatically for solar panels and solar energy. So all that is playing into kind of the formula of what do we do next, and what direction do we go with clean energy and renewable energies for the state.
Very interesting. Maybe that's our next conversation deep dive is on that piece. I hadn't thought of that before. We're with Leah Marquez Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commissioner, the only one hailing from Southern Arizona, although she represents the entire state. That was just the first half of our conversation. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about water and water companies. Water is a big topic here in the state. So much more to go. Give us a call on our Why I Love Where I Live live line. 790-2040 is your opportunity to ask Leah Marquez Peterson a question or make a comment or more. This is your time to talk with an elected official here in our state. Come on back. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show. This is Zach, your host. I'm joined in studio right now with Leah Marquez Peterson. She is the on the Arizona Corporation Commission and the only one hailing from Southern Arizona. So we like to do a monthly conversation here on the air. And I'm really excited before we get going to announce, even though I've talked about her before, but it's a new sponsor addition to the program. It's the Talent Store. My friend Devin Underwood. And if you're listening to this and this is meaningful to you, it probably means that you are running a successful business. Whether you're big or small, you're growing, and it's time to bring on the right talent to continue your success. Here's the thing. It takes a certain skill and focus to attract, recruit, and discover just the person you're looking for. And if you've run a business, hired for a business, you know that it's a special skill. So whether you need an executive, are filling a key role, or have multiple positions to fill, do the right thing, and honestly the easiest thing, and hand this process off to somebody who knows what they're doing. Do what you do best. Hand this piece off to the talent store. It's run by local talent strategist Devin Underwood, who can do it all. And she will do it well and do it expertly, and has many testimonials from the community about her work. So again, whether it's executive, whether it's a C-suite, whether it's a talent position, give Devin Underwood a reach out about that. And honesty moment, I just clicked out of the message on that. So I will find the number for you and give you Devin's number to call there before the show is out. Leah Marquez Peterson, welcome on back. One of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, and I know the ACC maintains just a portion of this conversation, but water.
Right.
And the specific piece is some will say, hey, look, we've got enough water in the state for our continued growth that we project in Maricopa and Pima counties. The ratepayer piece of that that I'm really interested in is that if you live here, I'm motioning in studio, and then my arm is going way over here, but the water right. source is way over here, the taxpayer is going to have to pay more for basically distributing that water from a non-close by area to an area that is farther. And the data from even 20 years ago shows that ratepayers are paying an exorbitant amount more for water now than they were before. Now, the ACC handles some things on the distribution side, not necessarily the decision-making side, but when it comes to water distributors or that topic, you've mentioned there's some things the ACC works around that. What do you make of this potentially impending crisis, and what's the ACC's small piece of managing it?
So I'll start by saying water is so complex in our state. And some of the key players that we interact with are ADEQ, Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, which maintains the quality of the water. ADWR, which is water resources in the state, determines the quantity, right? Do we have 100 years of water use to be able to do this development? Where the Corporation Commission gets engaged is, you're right, the distribution. So we regulate the private water companies. There are more than 1,500 water companies in the state of Arizona, which shocked me when I...
How many?
1,500 when I sat in this seat as a commissioner. Majority of them are run by municipalities.
Unbelievable.
Oh, and wastewater or the county or something of that sort. But about 350 of them are private. So those are the ones we regulate, we engage
okay.
with. Some of those, about 20%, are very large water companies, but the majority are small businesses, one or two man-operated water companies, some likely started by developers developing an area that wasn't served by any kind of water company. So we determine what territory that water company has. It's called a CCNN. We determine their interconnection to their existing system. We set the rates as companies invest. So you think in an ideal situation, as I'm learning more about how these operate, we need the proper investment to ensure that the pipes and the lines and the pumps and the tanks are all in good shape. So you've got that great quality of water that you want and at the right pressure, but not in an excessive rate. So it needs to be something that's invested in consistently, right? Maybe every 5 years they're coming before us for, and we approve their debt financing. We approve what kind of investment they can make and their rate of return on their investment. All of those pieces are what are before the Corporation Commission. So it's very complex. What I have found in my 6 months, again, being on the commission, is that there's a real variety of how water companies are handled throughout the state. It's not as consistent as I hoped. Some of the smaller water companies have not invested regularly. They haven't come before the commission in 20 years, let's say. So I'm worried about that. I think some of our processes that we use in the commission and throughout the state are not maybe the best fit for smaller water companies. So what I'm doing about that as a new commissioner, who certainly has had a background in small business, that was my role prior to being in this seat, is I'm having listening sessions. I'm planning now hosting small water company meetings in various parts of Arizona so that I can hear directly from them. Because my meetings that I'm having now, as I mentioned this week, I'm traveling to Globe and Nogales and up in northern Phoenix, and I'm really getting around the state talking primarily to water utilities in many cases, is to ask what's the hurdle? What's the challenge here? Is it the process to go through a rate case? Is it the cost of capital, the lack of capital? Is it the lack of management ability? I mean, there's so many pieces to running a small business, and a water utility is not that different, other than we're regulating the direction they can go. So I'm really in a research mode, gathering information to ensure that when you turn that tap on, it's the quality of water you expect and the quantity of water you expect. And we need to ensure that we're having consistent infrastructure investment, and we've got a fair way in which water companies can be dealt with and can be investing in making sure that they're providing just that quality that their own ratepayers want to see. Mm-hmm. So it's water has ballooned into a large project that I'm trying to tackle throughout the state.
That's what it sounds like. And again, I didn't know how this connected with some of your upcoming travel. I think that's kind of cool, because I just, as we were texting, I was like, I don't talk about this, and it really relates to what you're doing. So that's pretty cool. I try to think about the role that you have, which is regulating the utilities, but then also helping the ratepayer get the best possible experience as well. If there have been processes, again, way before your time on the commission, that haven't quite worked, and there's a small business water utility company that, you know, is 20 years behind where they should be in terms of all the investment infrastructure you mentioned, what happens to the ratepayer in that situation when they have to take that big of a up level in their infrastructure?
Yeah, we've seen this happen in many communities just in my 6 months, Apache County, out in Ajo, and just other places where we've had emergency rate cases. So in some cases, if there has been no investment made and something fails, that utility must fix the pump mm-hmm. or whatever it may be that's gone down the tank. They invest those dollars and come back to us to be reimbursed, in a sense, with a rate of return, so an emergency rate case. Not good. We don't want to go through those, right? You're seeing probably dramatic rate shock in some cases for a lot of the ratepayers.
Right.
For someone who has not invested for 20, 25 years, that's the challenge we've got to tackle. At what point do you invest? If your system is failing or you're not producing the quality of water, we're going to have to see rate increases to cover the cost of those that infrastructure investment. So we're looking at different angles and how we can best help some of those companies. And there are small water companies all over the state. I mean, even in Sahuarita has 4 or 5 smaller water companies. Nogales certainly has a number of them. I have a great map in my office that details kind of color-coded where all the small water companies are, and they are spread out throughout the entire state.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, our time, as it always does, is just coming quickly to a close. Leah Marquez Peterson, you are both traveling around the state, but you also have an office here in Tucson, as I'm aware. If anyone wants to continue this conversation, talk about a specific situation, take us off air with you, if you will. What's the best way to get a hold of you these days?
So I hope people will weigh in on all these very important conversations we're having. They can find me and other commissioners at azcc.gov, azcc.gov. I have an office at the State Building downtown Tucson, as well as one up in Phoenix, and happy to meet and talk with groups or individuals who have concerns.
Leah Marquez Peterson, ACC Commissioner, thanks for these monthly conversations.
Yeah,
I appreciate
the
update.
Thank you, Zach, for having me.
Super. And we'll do this again after 2, 3, maybe 4 meetings of the corporation.
Absolutely.
We'll see. And I wanted to circle back really quick. I mentioned that Devin Underwood, the principal of the Talent Store, can help you with any of your talent search or executive search needs. For a free 15-minute talent consultation, schedule a time to learn more at yourtalentstore.com, or you can email info@yourtalentstore.com, a rare technological faux pas. When I started this sponsored segment with the Talent Store, I wanted to circle back to that. Coming up, Doug Jen and Victoria, and then Bill Buckmaster, another local host here on 1030 The Voice, will be in to talk Tucson, as he always does, at the noon hour. Once again, we air live every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10 on this program, The Creative City Show, with me, your host, Zach Yenser. Much more coming up this week as we talk about people and ideas shaping the future of Tucson, the future that we want in this community. Take care, Tucson. See you on Wednesday the 13th. Stick around.